Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. This is episode number 44. We're going to talk about quarterback evaluation. We got Senior Bowl coming up. We have the playoffs going on. And I was looking at some work from Judy Batista, the writer for NFL.com. She did this really wonderful piece on Bill Walsh. And Bill Walsh is called Bill Walsh, the Forward Thinker at NFL.com. And she profiles Bill Walsh through the eyes of a number of his contemporaries, and you know, whether they were opposing coaches, coaches who worked with him, players who played with him, opposition, you name it. And when it came to quarterback evaluation, I thought there were some interesting things in here that are little nuggets that maybe people don't think about so much or really break down more. And the more that I study the quarterback position, the more that I'm beginning to have some nice success with it. I mean, I have to say, I mean, over the past, since about 2012, while I've had my share of misses and I'll continue to, you know, I was pretty ahead of the game on Russell Wilson. I was ahead of the game on Jared Goff, and I was definitely ahead of the game on Patrick Mahomes. You know, now, same time, I like Blaine Gabbert. You know, I mean, that was a guy that I liked, and that was part of my learning curve. You know, you're going to make mistakes. But I've learned over time that what's important about quarterbacking is the ability to be intuitive and creative, and that football is not so much science as it is a performance craft. And I think Bill Walsh understood that very well. And I'm starting to see that that's something that he emphasized to his players and coaches and people that he worked with. And while I haven't read The Winning Edge yet, and I can't wait to get that book, it'll be at the top of my reading list as soon as I can get my hands on it. I'm starting to realize that my path of studying this game has led me to that conclusion about football, and it's a conclusion that Bill Walsh long held. So it's something that's very quite validating. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Now, first, David Shaw, Stanford coach, worked with Bill Walsh as a player at Stanford. One of the things that he mentioned about quarterback play and what he looks for, and it's still the basis for his evaluations, is he has to see that a quarterback has a feel for moving in the pocket, that he has to have great anticipation for throwing the ball, and he has to be at his best in critical situations when the game's on the line. If you think about those three things, feel, anticipation, critical situations, that's all intuitive types of skill. Feel is an intuitive skill. It's processing information in front of you and then using, you know, the techniques that you've learned that are logical and quantitative, but then also being able to execute them in a way that may not be always by the book, but according to the situation. And that sometimes that means inverting what the conventions are to create a successful play. Anticipation is also feel. It's rhythm, timing. It's understanding of how to create that rhythm and timing based on what you see in front of you and negotiate obstacles and still be able to be on time. And then you talk about critical situations and being at your best with the game on the line. This is a stage. The NFL field is a stage. I mean, you've got, you know, 40, 50, 60, 80,000 people watching you in the stands. You can feel that. You can feel the energy of that. You can hear it. You know, when they roar, you can feel that on the field. You know that there are millions of people watching you on TV. That creates pressure. You know that the people you're playing with who are relying on you to play well so that they can support their families, that's pressure. These are grown men, as Ben Watson told me once. You know, the difference between playing at UGA or Duke and playing in an NFL stadium with NFL players is that these were grown men earning their living and relying on you to do the job right. And these were the best in their industry relying on you. That creates a lot of pressure. So it's a performance craft. And I think Matt Hasselbeck backs that up really well, the former Packers and Seahawks quarterback. This is what he said about Bill Walsh. One thing Mike Holmgren always used to say, he would say it while yelling at me, and I didn't understand it at first, was, you're a quarterback. an artist, not a blacksmith. When I really evaluated myself, I knew the defense. I knew the coverage. I knew where the ball was supposed to go. Then I'd see Brett Favre, and they'd be in an underfront, and he wouldn't throw the hot. He'd go to the curl. You're not supposed to do that. The Bill Walsh mindset of you're an artist, not a blacksmith. You paint your canvas throughout the game. That underscores the point of intuitive, creative skill. Because if you're always just trying to get the right answer according to convention, you're going to wind up with a check down. That's usually what happens. I mean, Will Hewlett said that to me, the quarterback coach, is that for a long time in Alex Smith's career, he was one of the smartest quarterbacks that you'd meet in the pro game. He was always very aware of scheme and understood what was going on. But when you're a coach or you're thinking from a coaching mindset, the right answer eventually for every play is a check down. But that's not what's going to create success. You have to have confidence in taking risks. You have to understand when to be bold. You know, great generals, great strategic people understand when to be bold and go against the odds or what seems to be the odds, you know, in terms of what's on paper, but understanding the moment and understanding what's going on around you and processing that and relying on your intuition to create something that was, you know, not anticipated, but's going to be successful. And so when I think about those things, it's in direct contrast with how the NFL oftentimes has been picking quarterbacks or looking at quarterbacks. And I'm going to read to you what I wrote in my evaluation pre-draft of Patrick Mahomes, okay, who, you know, was my top quarterback that I evaluated in the past 5 years. Now, when I say that, understand that, you know, yeah, that's somewhat of a victory lap here. Yeah, pat myself on the back, fine. You know, and I am proud of the fact that I saw this about Mahomes and that I stuck by it. But at the same time, you have to understand that if he went to Cleveland, if he went to Oakland, if he went to a team that maybe would have tried to make him be a quarterback in a different style than what he showed at in high school or at Texas Tech, he might not have been nearly as successful or, you know, right away, or maybe not at all. Maybe he got thrown under the bus like DeShone Kizer did, you know, to an extent. I mean, Kizer has, trust me, Kizer had his own issues and probably had some things that he had to learn, and there are things that were his responsibility. But at the same time, you know, he didn't have a quarterback room with a veteran, and he got thrown under the bus pretty early, and they rushed him into the lineup. If they did that with Patrick Mahomes, I think Mahomes had enough talent to probably show flashes, but he might not have had the opportunity to really incorporate the lessons of being a pro into his current existing game. And what we saw against the Colts, you know, on Saturday is a good example of a player who's learned the coverages, who's learned the adjustments of blocking schemes, who's learned the adjustments of what players can do at this level, and has it incorporated it into his existing style that we've always seen. Throwing off platform, throwing across his body, different arm positions, scrambling, risky looking throws that are really more bold than reckless, you know, aggressive play. Those were all things he did. Those were his style, but he learned how to take what he needed to know about the NFL and incorporate it into his game. And Andy Reid gave him a year to do that in the same way that Brett Favre had some time. That Andy Reid was flexible with him as well in terms of letting him make mistakes and not trying to change his game and turn him into a robo quarterback, as I call it. Same way that Donovan McNabb wasn't turned into a robo quarterback. So let's read a little bit about Patrick Mahomes and talk about this. This is what I wrote. Every team wants intuitive quarterback play from a technically sound passer with prototypical physical dimensions and top shelf athletic ability. And everyone would like to win the lottery too. Teams have to prioritize what's most important to them when searching for a quarterback. The way most teams behave, they hope that if they pick a safe, technically sound athlete that checks the easy-to-define boxes, it can lead them down a path where that quarterback's play someday becomes intuitive. All too often, they wind up with a prospect that looks like he rolled off an assembly line, but without the programming necessary to develop into the player that meets the organization's expectations on that investment. If the decision's an utter failure, at least they can provide a list of qualities the player possessed that justified the choice. You know, miles per hour with their throwing velocity, height, weight, what they could lift, what their stats were in college football, you know, whether they could, you know, read the whiteboard the way they wanted to in the meetings, all cover your ass kind of things. Now, if the decision's a limited success, they can cover their ass as well. They can proclaim hope for the player to eventually turn a corner and develop those elite level skills, which are all mostly intuitive. And that's going to raise public expectations, but also prolong their tenure in leadership, hoping that maybe they can buy time and get surrounding talent that will they can build around the quarterback. So if the quarterback and doesn't grow into that elite player, which he probably won't if he doesn't show those skills in the first place, then he'll at least plateau in a level where the team's still winning and the development doesn't, his lack of development or development plateau doesn't doom the team's chances for contention. You know, Dak Prescott's a bit of an accident. I really like Dak Prescott, but you know, he was a mid-range quarterback in the draft who still lacks anticipation. He's not going to make the greatest reads all the time, but he's a battler and he does have intuitive play about him. But he doesn't possess some of the other skills that might make him a high-end guy on a consistent basis. But if you give him a lot of surrounding talent, he can win for you. This team can win with him, even though the Cowboys eventually didn't win last night. Still, you can see why there's still hope for the future with him. But they weren't expecting him to be an elite player. Mitchell Trubisky, on the other hand, the expectation is for him to be a top talent. And the expectations are pretty high enough that we'll see if he can overcome some of the lack of intuition he shows in critical moments. But anyway, every so often, there's going to be teams that risk earning derision from fans, media, and colleagues. An NFL organization's going to veer from the established template of robo quarterbacks rolling off that college assembly line and invest in a player who's on-field intuition may be notable, but it's also accompanied by unconventional technique, atypical physical dimensions, or decision-making that's feared as irredeemably reckless. Because it's the road less traveled by organizations, the list of failed players that have these features about them and don't fit the robo-quarterback template, they're far more prominent in the historical lexicon of failures. You know, Johnny Manziel is a good example of that. You know, unfortunately, the root cause of these failures, which often have to do with factors that have nothing to do with the intuitive play or physical dimensions or technique, they get conflated with it. And Manziel is a great example. Now, I know a lot of people to this day will argue with me vehemently that he failed because he was short, he was light, he threw off platform, and he was reckless. Listen, Manziel didn't work, not because of those things. He didn't follow team rules. He had mental health issues. That's why. He didn't apply himself. Patrick Mahomes and Johnny Manziel have a lot more similarities than differences. Okay? Manziel didn't understand how to conduct himself like a professional. He didn't understand how to work. But on the field, he understood how to find open areas of the field, how to create off script. He had skill to avoid players in the pocket. He did some daring things. But because he didn't prepare, the daring often crossed the line into reckless behavior because he didn't understand or didn't make the effort to really work on working within the structures around him and knowing how to bend the rules in this game and when it was at a more advanced level. Patrick Mahomes is a worker. Patrick Mahomes took the time to understand coverages. Patrick Mahomes also had a coach who had high expectations for him, but allowed him to be the player he needed to be without suppressing his style. And when you suppress a player or a worker's style of doing things, eventually, psychologically, they're going to rebel. you know, Johnny Manziel probably rebelled a bit because he was likely suppressed to be something that he wasn't, you know, and he wasn't supported enough. But that's probably also none of the reasons why he self-destructed. He was going to self-destruct most likely wherever he went, you know, based on what was going on in his life. This is a guy with bipolar disorder, you know, that was not diagnosed and that he did not get treatment for. So he was most likely to self-destruct regardless of who he was with, unless that was identified beforehand. So, but at the same time, you know, when we look at Manziel and contrast him with guys like, oh, I don't know, Ryan Leaf, Brandon Whedon, EJ Manuel, Josh Freeman, man, those guys are all robo quarterbacks. They have the physical dimensions you're looking for, the technical specifications that, you know, any quarterback assembly line would have been proud to build. You know, their failures weren't inaccurately conflated with their style of play because they fit the profile of conventional decision-making. Even when these conventional decisions of picking the robo quarterbacks fail, they earn a lesser punishment for coaches, for owners and GMs than when creative decision making fails. Because when you make reckless plays and wild plays, it looks worse. It looks like you really don't even know what you're doing, as opposed to some of these guys who at least looks like they followed steps A through X, but you know, Y and Z were wrong, and they're like, oh, they're just this close. If they just get these two next steps, they're going to turn the corner. Whereas when you look at a guy like, you know, Mahomes, if he were making a lot of mistakes and he, you know, he didn't have the techniques that you'd look at and say, that's what a quarterback should be doing, you could note all these flaws or quote unquote flaws with his game and then try and point them and correlate them to bad decision-making when they're actually oftentimes different depending on the player. You know, so what I wrote about Mahomes before the draft is that if he becomes the first quarterback taken in this class, he's likely going to a team that not only has a GM or coach with a more flexible mentality than most of the league, but one that doesn't allow a cover-your-ass mentality to dictate important decisions. Think about that. Mahomes, when he went to the advisory board for the draft of coaches, GMs, and scouts, they said he was a third-round pick. He ended up getting picked in the 10th overall in the first round by a team, the Chiefs, who traded up for him. So they weren't in CYA mode. You know, they were flexible. They knew what they wanted in him. They recognized what he was. And I said, if Mahomes has long-term success, it will only happen if the GM and coach both value Mahomes for how he plays right now at Texas Tech. And how did he play at Texas Tech? Well, he had the caliber of arm and accuracy that allowed him to make pinpoint throws without the constant need of fundamentally sound footwork. He was a former shortstop and son of a Major League Baseball player. Mahomes threw the football with the accuracy, velocity, and acrobatics of an infielder. That's what I wrote. We're seeing that talked about all the time now for the past year and a half. Wrote this, 2 years ago, okay? I'm sure a lot of other people did as well who paid attention. Okay. The speed of his feet and wide range of arm angles and accurate delivery points are rare gifts. Also what I wrote, identifying and addressing areas where Mahomes can make easy fixes on traditional drops, sets, and pocket movement is a reasonable expectation for his long-term development. But thinking that Mahomes needs to eliminate the baseball infielder from his game is misguided and dangerous. Good developers of talent recognize gifts and focus on ways to build on the positives. They also possess the wisdom to ensure that the effort to correct the negatives doesn't bury the very things that make the individual special. So what I said is that Mahomes will be a good choice for a team that has a coach or general manager that covets this. That he won't be a good choice. Won't be a good choice for a team that has a coach or GM that covets the safety of a passer that thinks, moves, and functions as one of the thousands that could have rolled off an assembly line. It's not that Mahomes can't develop into a technically sound quarterback in those conventional ways. It's that an organization needs to allow him to build on his strengths. And his strengths are not part of that straight and narrow path of traditional quarterback development. You can see that they gave him a year. They gave him a year to learn how to read defenses on the level that he needed to for the NFL, the different adjustments he needed to make pre-post-snap, line adjustments, understanding how to practice with a team, how to establish himself as a leader, learning from Patrick Mahomes, blitz pickups, hots, all the different types of things that he knew certain things about at Texas Tech, but needed to develop on a more advanced level for the NFL without saying, let's redo your footwork. Let's redo your arm angles. Stop throwing at these odd angles. Stop trying to create on the move like this and throw across your body. No, it was more about, let's see what you can do and we'll peel it back or tone it down if it doesn't work. But first, let's see if it can work because we believe it. We saw what you were doing. We saw that all your decisions weren't reckless. Most of them were daring and bold and worked because they accounted for the right things in the process of decision-making, even if they're more intuitive than conventional. And they leaned on that and look what they got with Patrick Mahomes. You know, so that's, you know, there's a lot more that I wrote about him and talked about what he can do and what he had to work on. But, you know, you get the idea. The idea of this intro is about the fact that people get wrong fundamentally what they're looking for and what they have to allow for at this position and what they should be willing to grow with. So, you know, you can read the rest of the evaluation, the nuts and bolts of it at mattwaldmanrsp.com. And I have a complete sample of everything that I talked about with Mahomes, including some of the things that I wrote there. But again, it comes down to that Bill Walsh thought, which is comfort in the pocket, comfort throwing, playing off script, comfort with anticipation, the ability to make decisions, when the game is on the line and make clutch sort of plays. And that's something that, you know, we're seeing that with Mahomes more and more. You know, if it's not abundantly clear now, I think as we start to watch some of these games, he has no fear with the decisions that he's had to make in clutch moments, even when he's failed. And when he's failed, he doesn't go into a shell. So, you know, that's my thoughts on Mahomes. Now let's move on and talk a little bit about Lamar Jackson. Because, listen, you know, a lot of what's going on in terms of the analysis world with Lamar Jackson is that he's not very good. You know, that there's troubling ideas about Lamar Jackson. In terms of, you know, the offense he's playing in, it's limiting because he can't make good throwing decisions. And that, you know, I heard that, you know, some analysis has talked about, I think, that the Chargers only played cover three the whole game. And that, you know, I saw a play, I think from, who was it? Brett Coleman, who does some really fine work with his film room. Now I disagree with Brett in this instance. Brett showed a play about Lamar Jackson playing against cover three and how that he should have taken a three-step drop and thrown it up the seam to his tight end, and that he didn't throw the ball on time, and he gave a somewhat of a five-step drop with a look to the flat running back, and then a little bit of a pump fake, and then was too late to throw the ball and ended up sack. And he said that, you know, he should have taken a three-step drop and thrown up the seam. First things first, let's address that. Okay, the reason I disagree with Brett in this particular instance, and again, you know, all respect to Brett and the work that he does. He, you know, he does some really wonderful, well-produced film rooms. But, you know, analysis is up to interpretation about certain things. And part of it is that when he mentions cover three, you know, they played cover three all game. Well, you know, a lot of teams play cover three all game. Against veteran quarterbacks, And on top of that, too, there are a lot of variations of cover three in the lexicon of defenses, and they all matter differently. You know, they're all important. Those variations are all important, and they're subtle, and they require different adjustments with it. So to use the cover three analysis as they played it all game as a detriment, you know, as kind of a reflection of that Lamar Jackson is a simplistic quarterback who doesn't understand things, is inaccurate. Okay. Because again, there's so many variations of it that you're looking at to discern that it's kind of a, you know, it's kind of a comment that's, you know, it's an analysis point that was overemphasized and not subtle enough, if you ask me. Second of all, if you look at Lamar Jackson in terms of that particular play, you know, it's hard to tell whether or not it should have been a 3 or 5 step drop. What you do know is that there's a safety who's in that seam area. And if it weren't for Jackson actually turning and opening his body to the running back in the right flat, he wouldn't have been able to throw that ball. He was trying to actually get the safety to move, and he got the flat defender to move there. And unfortunately the rush came. So if you look at where the defense was playing at that moment and why he was doing what he did, it makes sense to me. It made sense to other people I know who work in the league as well. When I showed that analysis to a couple of people and said, hey, am I missing something? You know, am I missing something with this? Because it seems to me that, you know, this probably should have been a 5-step drop. This probably should have been a look off here because of where the defender is. And I got the same kind of validation on that as well, as that no, this wasn't a 3-step type of deal. And then when you talk about missing throws or missing angles and he can't see it, or implying that based on looking at that information, you know, just look at Matt Bowen. Matt Bowen's work at ESPN. Matt Bowen, the former NFL safety. Matt Bowen, you know, looks at a couple of plays just, you know, the week before, showing dagger concepts, showing different types of look where he had to look up the seam and make a quick throw into tight windows of zone. And he did it, you know, and he's been doing it all year. But I think that what happens is, you know, people look at a loss or they look at the lack of yardage and they want to just immediately say, well, the offense is mostly running based. And so therefore, you know, Lamar Jackson isn't good. He's not going to be good. But let's think about this a little bit more. First of all, when you watch that game against the Chargers, last week, Chargers played a lot of defensive backs early on. They loaded up the defensive makeup with defensive backs. They played some good, you know, gap sound techniques that they didn't play early on in the previous matchup. But also the Ravens didn't really adjust. They were, you know, there were a lot of twists that were happening. That's when linemen actually loop around each other to create confusion with the offensive line. And when you have that happening, a good way to counter that is with the draw game, the lead draw game, the quarterback draw. You didn't see a lot of quarterback draws in that first half. The Ravens abandoned that. They didn't even use it in this game. There were a number of different types of plays in terms of different types of blocking schemes for their veer attack, for their inverted veer, for their option game that they didn't use in this game. It's like they abandoned a lot of it. They went very simple. And they weren't going that simple early on in Lamar Jackson's tenure as the starter. But they went ultra conservative, ultra careful, and really shackled Lamar Jackson with the lack of creative play calling that was within the lexicon of what Jackson was doing earlier in the season. And they got well behind, and it wasn't until the end of the game that they actually took the shackles off Jackson as a passer and as a runner. And when they did, guess who brought them within a reasonable amount of points to actually make the game competitive? Lamar Jackson did. He made accurate throws. He made good decisions. They were too conservative with Jackson. Now, I understand he threw an interception in the first half. That was on him. It was a bad play. He also had a fumble. Kenneth Dixon had a fumble. Now, they didn't play crisp offense, but it wasn't all Lamar Jackson. You know, the things that were his fault, yeah, they were. But you can see that when they gave him the opportunity to be the quarterback that he's capable of being, and taking the shackles off and letting him to throw, letting him scramble. And they weren't just doing set passing plays, where there was one play that was just awful. I watched where it was a quarterback throw. It was like a throwback play, and there was just no time because the pressure was getting to the Ravens offensive line. They were whipping Hurst in that game, and Jackson had no time to complete even a designed play, because the design play lasted too long in terms of its development time. It was too long or slow developing of a play. So when I look at, you know, what people say about Jackson, what's happening is that they don't really understand that the offensive line played poorly. They don't understand that, you know, there are different types of coverage that was invoked there, and that the offense didn't have responses to what was going on appropriately for what the defense was throwing at them in terms of their front with the twists, and that the offense wasn't using the same variety of plays that confused and defeated opponents with Jackson under center than what they were doing in the past. So the whole thing was kind of odd. If, you know, in addition to, yes, Jackson made two critical mistakes that helped that team, help the Ravens, you know, end up being behind early in the game, but he also brought them back, and he did it often with his arm. So just be careful with that. You know, again, I'm not trying to, you know, go after Brett. You know, I just disagree with him about some of the points that he made, and talking with people that I know and looking at somebody's analysis like Matt Bowen's as well, you know, I think it points more towards the point, you know, towards the ideas that I have about Jackson in this case. So we'll see if the Ravens can be a little more dynamic with Jackson within the coming period of time, you know. And I know that there's some guys who, you know, who have talked about, you know, Jackson maybe not, you know, being very good. You know, I think Brian Billick is one of them. And, you know, what I'll say is that, you know, at this point, I think that there are a lot of former NFL coaches and players who often pontificate about players in terms of the evaluatory aspect of it and get it wrong. You know, I mean, so, you know, when I look at Brian Billick's frame of reference, you know, obviously he's got a lot of knowledge as an NFL, former NFL coach, but it's not like he picked Tom Brady out of a lineup, or that he could pick Tom Brady out of a room full of Tom Brady's when it came to evaluating the position. You know, so I would say, if you are worried about Lamar Jackson, I would tell you to be a little bit more patient. Give him a full off season. This is a player who played in a pro style offense with Bobby Petrino. Maybe the verbiage was a little less, you know, wasn't as complex, and they kind of toned it down a bit for him. But this is a guy who was, you know, basically at a remedial level in terms of play calling verbiage when he entered the college game, and really worked to a level of competency every day, to a point where he was, you know, he played at a high level. And I think that you're going to see the same thing as he makes a transition from the college game to the NFL game. And what they were really doing in Baltimore, at least until last week, was they were using his legs and arm in a fashion where they could do a lot of variety with the veer, or the inverted veer in the option game, to create a lot of conundrums for defenses. And they just kind of constrained that, they constrained the options that were available to him and what the offense was running in the past. So again, the thing about quarterback play also is that you don't want to judge after year one. You know, the media oftentimes, and even former coaches in the media, producers oftentimes pressure these guys to, or influence these guys to make definitive statements, make statements that will get eyeballs to read their work. And sometimes that means I have really serious concerns about the ability of player X, or player wise, now one of the greatest, you know, could be one of the next greats in the league, when there's a long way to go with, you know, in terms of, there's a lot of analysis that's often embedded in these pieces that are treated as if it's like not really, how would I put it? Doesn't really support the headline. How about I put it that way? It's a lot calmer than the hot take of the headline looks. So, you know, with Jackson, give him a year and give him one more year with Greg Roman as the coach, as opposed to kind of a, you know, cohort with Marty Morningwig. And I think we'll get a chance to see with a full off season, you know, an offense that's more consistent and allows, you know, input from Jackson as well, an ability to kind of meld his talents with what they expect from him and let him kind of grow into it a little bit more. Because I look at a guy like Baker Mayfield, and I'd say as high as people are on Baker Mayfield, as my buddy Mark Schofield wrote in recent RSP blog, he mentioned that, you know, the comfort within chaos and inviting chaos is a dual-edged sword for Mayfield. And that's something that we've both evaluated with him separately, is that he often invites chaos when he shouldn't. And as good as he's been in the red zone, he still has had multiple interception games. He's been a reason why this team struggled offensively at certain points or has had made critical mistakes in games that, you know, that put Cleveland in bad situations. You know, he can't be excused for all that. You know, he's played well, and I like what I've seen from him, but it doesn't mean that he's completely out of the woods yet either. Now, fans who just really like Cleveland and really like Mayfield will say, oh, he's going to be great. Sure. That's a possibility. But I would say that there's still some caution left here. I don't think he's shown, like Patrick Mahomes has, that, you know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, whether you take away his receiving core, whether you take away some of his linemen, whether you take away his running back, whether you limit him in certain ways, that he can transcend it the way Matt Mahomes has. You know, that's still yet to be determined with Mayfield. We've seen him kind of more or less struggle with some of the types of constraints put on him in certain areas. So it's a little bit of a different level. But anyway, you know, when I think about quarterback evaluation, you know, the biggest thing is the team going to cover their assets and play too conservative about a player and not let him be who he is? I think the Browns are going to allow Baker Mayfield to be who he is. And that's why I think that there's generally a positive vibe. I worry that the Ravens will not let Lamar Jackson totally be who he is and allow him to grow to be what he can be as a passer, because he really is a better passer than they've shown, because they wanted to really exploit his legs. And so I'm worried that they might be limiting him to a degree. And that's where my concern is, less about Lamar Jackson, but about the team he's with. Patrick Mahomes is on the opposite end of that. They've let him be who he is and given him time to learn and given him time to incorporate what he needs to know about the game into, you know, his NFL level of play. So with quarterback evaluation, we're going to enter this another full year where we're going to be talking about technique and mechanics and miles per hour velocity and what they can do on a whiteboard, and lots of people talking about leadership who've never been leaders. I always love that too. I mean, I've at least led people. You know, I've at least understood what it means to manage an organization or a team. Good or bad, successes and failures. I've understood that. There are a lot of people who pontificate about leadership with these guys and don't know the first thing about leadership. You know, it's a complex decision. It's a complex position, and it's a performance position. I think that's another part of it too, is people don't understand what performance feels like. They've never been on stage. They've never worked at a craft. And they don't understand how that fits into this position. But if you can kind of account for these things and understand that, you know, you take away from this podcast that it's a performance craft, it's done on a stage, creativity and intuition are important parts of it, and having a supporting staff of developers and coaches and leaders who can account for that and who aren't trying to beat that out of them, then you're going to have a winning formula. So I want to thank you for listening. If you like this podcast, if you like the other podcasts that I've been doing, please rate and review this on iTunes or Google Play or Stitcher. You can subscribe to the podcast on any of those formats. Also on Blueberry. And, you know, if you haven't checked out the Rookie Scouting Portfolio publication, you can go to mattwaldmanrsp.com or mattwaldman.com and check out the tour, the video tour of the past RSP and RSP post draft. They are available for pre-order. The 2019 version is available for pre-order in terms of getting it so that you can get a login and password to download it on April 1st. And then the post draft comes within a week of the after the NFL draft. The pre-draft is more of a, you know, more of a draft Nick football fan scout media type focused publication with fantasy information, but it's more of for fantasy players. It's more of a long-term look, I would say. You know, more of a look of what this player can be if he gets cut or traded or becomes a free agent and joins another team and gets an opportunity there. You can learn a lot more long-term about their talents. The post-draft is more about a 2 to 3 year outlook window based on where they arrive with that team and fit. And it's great for dynasty players. But either way you go, I mean, you get both publications for one price. 10% goes to Darkness to Light, which is an organization that fights. It's an organization that is designed to train people on how to prevent sexual abuse of children, and then also how to address it when it does happen to children in their communities, so that they can prevent communities from compounding the victimization that happens when they don't handle these reports well. So it's an awesome organization that I would definitely recommend looking into, d2l.org. If you just want to donate on your own, I'd certainly recommend that. But if you want to get a publication on the draft that I think, you know, a lot of people would recommend, if you ask around, the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, 10% of it goes to that organization, 10% of every sale. So thanks again for listening. Hope you guys enjoy your week ahead. The next time I'm on this show, most likely we'll have another guest, and then I'll also be broadcasting from the Senior Bowl and probably having a cavalcade of guests as we talk about that practice. You guys have a good week.